For 2 millennia, at the center of our faith stands a cross. It's been that way for a long time. Still the focus of Christian reflection. After all these years, far more than just a meditation during Lent, for St. Paul, it was all-consuming. Christ crucified, he preached. To the Greeks, foolishness. To the Jews, a stumbling block. What is it to us? Rome made the cross of Christ the primary symbol of Western Christianity. In Constantinople, in the East, it is the empty tomb. For the gospel writers, it placed a great demand on their faith, as you might imagine, because it fell to them to make sense out of something that made no sense. Namely, of trying to blend the crucifixion of Christ with the grace of God. How do we hold those two together? Only Matthew and Luke bother to mention Christmas. But all four Gospels give at least a third of their narrative to Good Friday. In today's text, Matthew alludes to it 11 chapters before it happened. He tells us where he's going with this. And so Jesus is at the foot of Mount Hermon up north in the Galilee, where he pointed his friends to Mount Calvary in the south in Jerusalem. It was both attractive and disturbing. The nub of it was when Jesus said that he must go up to Jerusalem, where he will be killed, and on the third day, raised from the dead. And that set up all kinds of alarms in the ears of his followers. When he said it, that there's no whining, there's no victimization, there's no how unfair this is, no ifs, ands, and buts, just an open embrace of what lies ahead. Now you could call it courageous, you could call it crazy. Some think Jesus had a death wish, some think he had a martyr complex. And I could see how somebody would think like that. So, what happened to free will? What is the source of Jesus' excruciating sense of necessity? How can something so traumatic be part of the will of God? There must be some other way, some other option. And that was Peter's position at Caesarea Philippi. And it got him in a heap of trouble with Jesus. We're not used to hearing Jesus call somebody names. That's what we do. We like to think Jesus is a little better than that, don't we? Here he reverted to name calling. That's how serious it is. Get behind me, Satan, he said. Jesus wasn't fooling around. This is big for him. Strong stuff. And in our day, we know the harshness subsided on the third day. It took the third day to soften it. Because the crucifixion is just so harsh that in light of the resurrection, it made a little difference. Because that's when it was first interpreted as the gracious hand of God, rather than the violent terror of man. They looked again back at the Old Testament stories that they were so familiar with, And they looked at them in light of the cross. It put everything in different perspective. And they did it with a hermeneutic that is foreign to us today. It was a method of interpreting current events as if they had been intended to be that all along. Now stay with me on this. I call it the flow of inevitability. There are lots of biblical examples of it. Looking back at the betrayal of the Lord by Judas Iscariot, the church was pretty hard on Judas. They said he was a devil from the beginning. See? But after the conversion of Paul, the church could take it in the other direction too, saying that he was set apart from his mother's womb. The result reveals the purpose. So the purpose of Jesus was to be crucified. That was his job. There was no way around it. He must, as Matthew's word, be crucified. The Apocalypse has another way of putting it. It says he was the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. The result really reveals the purpose. The Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. He was slain then. But it was for our redemption that he was slain. From the beginning. This is how they understood it. This is how they tried to make sense out of it. And when Jacob's favorite son, Joseph, he was finally reconciled with his brothers who previously had sold him into slavery, their own brother, because they were jealous. But Joseph said to them, "You intended it for evil, but God intended it for good." Don't you just love that? God has been in the business of turning evil into good for a mighty long time. And Jesus, having to go to Jerusalem, poses a threat to our most prized possession, religious liberty. Where is freedom? The freedom to choose our own destiny. If he must go, if he had to go, if there was no other way around going. Isn't our real problem with Matthew's have to that we grant no quarter in our lives to that confining word, must? Telling somebody what they must do or must not do is not the way to go a lot of the time if we can avoid it. Telling somebody they must do something, it comes across as pushy. And pushing folks can damage our fragile psyches, we're told. With benefits nowadays, some folks don't even have to go to work. Nothing says you must go to college. And certainly nobody must go to church. Must doesn't apply in situations like that. And our people thus compelled with shoulds and oughts to be seen as impulsive or in need of therapy or something? Or could our resistance to must and have to feed into our modern rejection of responsibility and being accountable for what we do? As long as we can blame somebody else for our faults, must is way too demanding for our time. Who likes being feeling like they got to get out of bed and face freeway traffic every day? We don't do it because we like it, but we must if we've got to get where we're going to go. Who wants to study all night for exams or shovel snow? If you want to get the car out of the garage, you shovel snow. You must. Must takes away our apps buttons. We like our options. We like our alternatives. We like wiggle room. How inconvenient to be put on and boxed in with obligations or expectations. Give us a world with no assignments, no offering plates, and no checks and balances. Consider anybody who accomplished something noteworthy. You'll find a must down on the inside of them somewhere. You don't get to the final four without a must. It takes hard work, admitting your mistakes, correcting your mistakes, learning from your mistakes, discipline to get to the final four. Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Edison, Winston Churchill are a few who failed badly in tasks that were taken by a task that they assumed early on in life. Michael Jordan, without peer in basketball. I think the guy could fly. So he decided to try his hand at baseball. And a reporter asked him, "Well, what if you fail?" And he said, "I'm not afraid to fail. That's why he's great." Paul McCartney was turned down at the Liverpool Cathedral Boys Choir back in the 50s because the choir master said he couldn't sing. Even Walt Disney was fired from his first newspaper job because his boss said he lacked imagination and creative ideas. He filed bankruptcy more than once before envisioning someplace called Disneyland. These are exemplary because, in spite of their failures, they kept on trying every time they missed the mark. Which, by the way, is the definition of sin in the New Testament. Sin is missing the mark. You see, failure is temporary. Quitting, that's permanent. Now, there's a reason, I won't get in trouble for this, I call my wife Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman. She has a servant's heart. She volunteers with FEMA, the blood bank, water fire escort, all that stuff. And one thing she's not is lazy. But everywhere we live and she ends up getting a job, I know why they want to keep her. She has a track record like that all across this country. She works now every Friday and Saturday night a midnight shift as a dorm mother over at the Avalon. It's from 12 o'clock to 8 a.m. Then she goes home for some shut-eye. No. She washes her face and comes over here to church first. And I got to be on my toes just to keep her awake during the preaching. And all those full night sleepers out there who never bother to darken the doors of a church, they have it all. But they lack one thing. There is no must inside of them. Just whatever is inside too many of us, isn't it? Or the Apostle Paul, converted as an adult to a new religion, sick much of his life, spent more time in jail than behind a pulpit, shipwrecked, stoned, beaten, disrespected by his church, his heart set on taking the gospel to Spain, ended up in house arrest in Rome. Ask him, hey, Paul, isn't being a missionary a piece of cake? He said, if I preach the gospel, I have nothing to boast about, for an obligation has been entrusted to me. Necessity has been laid upon me. Holy guacamole. I wish more people had that. Or Jesus. You know, he said, we must go through Samaria. Now, what makes that laudable? Going through Samaria. We must go through Samaria, he said. Because everybody else went out of their way to detour around Samaria. Wouldn't be caught dead in Samaria. But Jesus goes out of his way to bless somebody nobody else would. Why tarnish your reputation, his disciples said to him. Why talk to the Samaritan woman in broad daylight when people can see you? Why take your reputation so recklessly? And he who made of himself no reputation just said, I must. Great people do what they have to do because they're inwardly possessed by something noble. And that is the key to any worthwhile accomplishment that ever gets done. We never know what we can do completely until we have to. And that's when we find what we're made of. Unwarranted dependency deprives us of dignity. There's no fulfillment in entitlement. There's no must in parking on somebody else's nickel. Jesus said the road is broad that leads to destruction. Few there be that find it. Could he be talking about his frail children of light being more interested in alternatives than achievement? Well, how do we get that? Must. From whence cometh our have-tos? It has to come from the inside. The drive of necessity isn't something that you can fabricate. You can't buy it at Walmart. You either have it or you don't. Other than the military, where else can we go today to develop character? Church is one place that should help us get some. If our religion doesn't do anything to our character, then it isn't worth having. Now, there are things that we cannot make somebody do. You can't make a student learn. How do you make people love? I wish we could manufacture that. Or make somebody come to worship. Those are things you have to want. Nobody can do it for us if we don't want it. I have great respect for the Coast Guard because they are dedicated to saving people's lives who are in real danger. Drowning. And I watched this program up in Alaska, you know, the Coast Guard in Alaska, and it was showing a fierce storm hit, and that's where its ships break apart, and you have this small window of time for rescue. And in a recent storm, the captain ordered the lifeboat to be launched, and with the tide was running out to sea at the time and wind was whipping up, coming on shore, and one of the crew protested, well, we can go out in this gale, we won't come back. And the captain said, launch it anyhow. We have to go out. We don't have to come back. That's what I'm talking about. The honor of having to do something. Nothing can stop them. Neither height, nor depth, nor things present, or things to come, nor powers, nor anything else in all creation. Everyday folks might think people like that are obsessed. They just come to see that their calling is more important than how they happen to feel about it on any given day. The people who are really burdened are those out there who get up every morning, go to bed every evening, struggling with great issues like, what shall we eat? What shall we drink? What shall we watch? Wherewithal shall we be clothed? Then they get up the next morning and go back to bed night after night, week after week, year after year, and then they grow old and die without ever having a burden. So, if you are one of those few blessed with having an inner must to guide you, a have-to put some fire in your belly, if you've been given a burden from God, then thank God for it. Because that happens to be the way the story of our redemption begins. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go up to Jerusalem and suffer and be killed and raised on the third day.